Ah, you're here. Good.
A ghost couldn't dig a grave, make John strangle me to death.
Lights out, everybody.
Welcome to the Old Time Radio Cast, where we take the most terrifying tales from the golden age of radio, clean them up, and remaster them for your listening pleasure, truly preserving the very best era of audio entertainment with stories of suspense, mystery, and horror. While we still have a number of shows to introduce on the podcast, I'd like to make a quick return back to everybody's favorite show, Suspense. This week we're going to hear what is considered to be one of the most frightening episodes of Suspense, titled The House in Cypress Canyon, followed by a stone-cold classic called The Hitchhiker. Enjoy.
And now, Roma Wines, R-O-M-A, Roma Wines present Suspense.
Tonight, Roma Wines bring you Robert Taylor in The House in Cypress Canyon, a suspense play produced, edited, and directed for Roma Wines by William Spear.
Suspense, radio's outstanding theater of thrills, is presented for your enjoyment by Roma Wines. That's R-O-M-A, Roma Wines. Those better-tasting California wines enjoyed by more Americans than any other wine. For friendly entertaining, for delightful dining. Yes, right now, a glassful would be very pleasant as Roma Wines bring you Robert Taylor, star of Metro-Goldwyn-Mayer's Undercurrent, in a remarkable tale of
suspense.
Merry Christmas, Jerry. How's the real estate business?
Kind of early with your greeting, aren't you, Sam?
Well, I got to get them in sometime. I may not see you again until next Christmas.
If this real estate racket gets any crazy, I'll be dead by next Christmas. I'm glad you could get up here, though, Sam.
What's on your mind, Jerry?
You'll probably shoot me when you hear it, Sam, because I'm probably nuts. But doggone it, you're a detective and you're my pal, and I just had to tell somebody.
Well, you sound like it's serious.
That's just it. I don't know what it is, Sam, but... Now, listen, You know, we're agents for a group of houses up in Cypress Canyon.
Mm-hmm.
Those places that were started before the war never got finished.
Oh, yeah.
All I got in were the foundations, just concrete and a couple of beams. Well, they've been finished now. In fact, I'm putting up the for rent on the last of them today.
What do you want? Police protection from the mob?
Listen, Sam, this house that I'm talking about, it's got a number now, 2256. But before, when the men went back to work on it about 3 months ago, well, they just started when the foreman on the job brought me a shoebox that he'd found up on a beam. And this box had a manuscript in it, a story, kind of, all written out.
Yeah.
Well, he gave me the thing. I read it. I didn't think much about it. I put it in my desk. But the other day, and I happened to drive by there, I saw the number on the house and what the house looked like. I thought of this manuscript. And, well, I don't like it, that's all. There's something funny about it.
Well, what's funny about it?
Well, mind you, this thing was found in an unfinished house in Cypress Canyon. House was only just started building.
All right.
Well, listen, Sam, I want to read it to you if you got the time, and you'll see what I mean.
All right, shoot.
Well, here's how it begins. To whom it may concern, my reasons for setting down on paper what follows here will be abundantly clear.
What follows here will be abundantly clear to anyone into whose possession it may fall. First, let me say that I'm a very ordinary person. My name is James A. Woods. I'm 35 years old. By profession, a chemical engineer. My wife, Ellen, was a school teacher when I met and married her in Indiana 7 years ago. There's nothing in the past life of either one of us to suggest remotely any cause or reason for the dreadful thing that has invaded our lives. Our married life has been in no way different from that of millions of other average, reasonably happy, and congenial families. 3 months ago, I was ordered by my firm to take charge of a rather minor project in Los Angeles, Hollywood to be exact. The order was a sudden one. There'd been no time to secure accommodations, and conditions being what they are, the inevitable result was that until day before yesterday, we'd been living in the cramped quarters of one of those characteristic California motels. Needless to say, most of our spare time had been devoted to a search for something more permanent and comfortable, but the fruits of these efforts had been, financially and in every other way, a geometrical progression of discouragement. Until last Saturday afternoon, only 4 days before Christmas, we were driving into town on our way to a movie when Ellen saw it.
Jim, look!
What?
That sign in front of that real estate office.
Oh, yeah.
But
yeah.
Don't you see what it says? For rent, furnished, two-bedroom house, close-in, immediate occupancy.
Yeah, uh-huh.
Aren't you going to stop?
Oh, Ellen, you know what a sign like that. It'd mean right out in plain sight in front of a real estate office.
Oh, yeah, but Jim...
Either they want $600 a month...
We'll never know until we ask.
And if it's any good at all, there are probably 50 people fighting for it right back there now.
Well, honey, there's no harm in trying. Now, is there?
You really want to go back?
Oh, it's probably foolish, but what can we lose?
Okay.
Oh, darling, come on, cheer up. How do you know? Maybe our luck's changed. Maybe fate's gonna give us a nice new house for a Christmas present.
Come in.
Oh, we're sorry to bother you, but we just happened to see that for rent sign outside.
Oh,
and,
yeah, I hung it outside just this minute.
Is the house available?
Why, sure, sure it is.
Let me introduce myself. My name is James A. Woods, and this is my wife, Ellen.
How to do? Wow. Looks like it's fixing to rain.
Yes, so it does, doesn't it? Well, it was one of those things. The real estate agent had just been authorized to rent the place by mail that morning, and he'd hardly had time to look at it himself and put up his sign when we drove up. It was just an ordinary little California house about halfway up Cypress Canyon, number 2256. Just an ordinary, undistinguished little house. The agent didn't know much about it. Construction on it had been stopped by the war, and it had just been completed and furnished lately. Been vacant while somebody's estate was being settled, and now it was owned by a bank in Sacramento. Of course, we didn't
care about it. Got this key in the mail along with the authorization to rent. Only one there is. Of course, you can have duplicates made. Yeah, seems to stick a little. Oh, no, there it is.
Doesn't sound as though that door had ever been opened.
Well, a little oil on the hinges will fix that, all right.
Oh, sure.
Now here's your living room. Furniture's a little dusty, of course. You got to expect that. It's good furniture, though, you see? Benson Brothers.
Yes,
Now, over here's a little den. Paneled, you see? Radio, fireplace. Really a very attractive little room, particularly for a man.
Uh-huh, yep.
Now, the bedroom's off the living room here. Everything's all on one floor, you understand?
Uh-huh.
It's quite nice, I think.
Yes, uh-huh.
You can see you get the morning sun here. There's a view of the canyon through these front windows. You got cross ventilation.
That's about all there was to it. It wasn't the best place in the world. It was small and badly built, but what would you have done? We took it with as little inspection as that. It was the Saturday before Christmas. And the very same evening, we were struggling up the steps from the road with suitcases and boxes and armloads of clothes and all the endless bric-a-brac that people collect and never know they have until they move. Ellen began unpacking, and I began moving things around and taking the worst of the pictures off the wall, doing all the little things that everybody does when they move into a new place and try to give it something of their own.
Don't be such a sour puss. You know, it's a roof over our heads for Christmas. That's more than we ever thought we'd get, isn't it? Now, what in the world are we going to do with those two pictures?
Why don't we just leave them where they are?
Jim, we can't. They're too awful.
Well, all right, put them in the closet then.
I can't. Both the closets are jammed full.
No, I mean the other one in the little alcove off the den. At least there's a door there. I suppose it's a closet.
Yeah.
I don't know.
That isn't a commentary on the housing problem, huh? A woman moving into a house without even knowing where all the closets are. Take the pictures down, will you, honey? Bring them in here.
Okay.
Oh, I guess you'll have to help me with this door. I can't get it open.
Let me see it. Well, of course you can, silly. It's locked. Where are those keys we found in the desk?
Here they are.
Nope. Not this one. Sure this one won't work. Nope. Feels like an awful solid door for a closet.
Oh, and that's one solid door in the house.
Nope, this one won't do it either. Well, we'll
Just have to get a locksmith up here on Monday. I'll put the pictures behind the desk, okay?
Yeah, all right. Jim, if you could just help me move this armchair, huh?
Oh, Ellen, will you let it go until tomorrow? You know what time it is?
Oh, but honey, I'd like to get the place looking just a
little
bit.
Yeah, but it's almost midnight. In fact, it's exactly...
What was that?
Tomcat, I guess, out in the brush somewhere.
Sounded near. Hope that doesn't go on all night.
Well, there's much we can do about it. Come on, Ellen. I'm dead tired.
All right, Jim. All right.
Where'd you put the toothpaste, honey?
It's right in the medicine cabinet.
Oh, yeah.
Jim, we ought to get some firewood tomorrow. You know, a fire in that living room would make all the difference in the world.
Can't. Sunday.
Well, Monday, then. Jim, I think red curtains are what we need, don't you?
Mm-hmm. Mm.
You know, just at least for the living room. Anyway, the ones in there now have just got to come down.
Yeah, I suppose they do.
What do you think of red?
Well, I guess it's all...
Jim.
It's some tomcat.
Jim, it sounded in the house.
Oh, now, how could it be in the house, Ellen? We've been over every inch of the house.
Except that closet.
Now, how could a cat or anything else be in the closet that's been locked up for over a year?
I don't know.
It's probably under the house. A wildcat or mountain lion or something. I hear they have them in California.
Jim, I don't like it.
Well, neither do I like it, but there's nothing we can do about it tonight.
Well, maybe we ought to call somebody, the police or some neighbor.
Oh, don't be silly, Ellen. You act like a kid. Come on, let's go to bed, huh?
Well, all right, I suppose it is silly. Jimmy, did you lock the door?
Yeah. Can I turn out the lights now?
Yeah, all right.
Good night, Ellen. Sleep tight.
Good night, Jim.
I don't know what time it was, perhaps an hour, perhaps only a half hour later. My mind was in that hazy borderland between sleep and a dream that's still part of consciousness. Then I was awake. Ellen, are you all right?
Yes.
Did you have a nightmare or something?
No. I heard it too.
Well, that didn't sound like any cat.
Put on the light.
Yeah.
It seemed to be out there, Jim, in the house somewhere.
I'm going to look into this.
Jim, you be careful.
Come on. Where's my shotgun?
In the den, I think. Jim.
What?
There's something wet.
What? Wet?
Running from under the closet door. Sticky.
Ellen, don't. Don't touch it.
I had to. Jim, it's blood.
For Suspense, Roma Wines are bringing you Robert Taylor in The House in Cypress Canyon. Roma Wines' presentation tonight in radio's outstanding theater of thrills, Suspense.
Between the acts of Suspense, this is Ken Niles for Roma Wines. These days before Christmas are busy ones indeed, yet smart hostesses everywhere find time for shopping and distinguished home entertaining later. The secret? Magnificent Grand Estate Wines. Presented by Roma, America's greatest vintner, Grand Estate Wines add distinction to your hospitality on a moment's notice. Make your holiday welcome, effortless, and in perfect taste. The brilliant clarity, full fragrance, and mellow taste of Grand Estate wines please discriminating people everywhere. For Grand Estate wines, limited bottlings by Roma, are born of choicest grapes, then patiently guided to superb taste richness by Roma vintner skill, necessary time, and America's finest winemaking resources. Delight your guests with Grand Estate California wines for entertaining, medium sherry, ruby port, or golden muscatel. For dining, burgundy or sauterne. So insist on Grand Estate wines and enjoy the crowning achievement of vintner skill.
And now, Roma Wines bring back to our Hollywood soundstage Robert Taylor as James A. Woods, with Kathy Lewis as his wife Ellen, in the house in Cypress Canyon. A tale well calculated to keep you in suspense.
It cannot be too difficult to understand from the foregoing why I've taken the pains to set down in writing the events related here. To find in one's newly rented house a closet which cannot be opened is in itself certainly no great cause for alarm. But to be awakened in the stillness of the night by unearthly cries within that house, to find oozing from under that closet door something that is unquestionably blood, that's another matter. Perhaps others might have been braver than we. Suffice it only to say that we got out of the house in something very close to a panic, and only returned when we had the moral support of two stalwart Los Angeles policemen.
You just moved in here, you say?
That's right, officer. You can see we're still unpacking.
And the place has been empty right along before that?
Yeah, I don't know much about that part of it. You could check all that with the real estate agent, though.
Well, where is this closet?
Oh, it's right in here, officer. And the blood is...
Where? Where's the blood?
Jim?
Officer, I swear to you, there was blood on the floor less than an hour ago. I saw it.
Uh-huh.
It was running out from under that door. We heard that noise, and we got up, and then we saw it. The door was locked.
Locked, huh? It seems to be all right now.
Hey, you folks aren't trying to be funny, are you?
Isn't there anything in it?
No, ma'am, there is not.
Look, officer, we're reputable people. You can call my firm. They'll tell you all about me.
There's nothing wrong with this closet. Walls are solid. No trap doors.
If you think I'm lying...
I didn't say that, mister. Oh, you probably did hear some sort of a noise, and you got a little panicky, and...
What about the blood? Got on my hand.
It isn't there now, is it?
Yes.
Where?
I feel it.
Now, you folks just take it easy. You know, you're liable to hear all kinds of noises up in these canyons at night. You're from the east, you say?
Yeah. I'm sorry, officer.
Ah, that's all right. That's all right. If you have any real trouble, call on us anytime.
All right.
Well, good night.
Good night.
Good night. Hey. You ought to have this door fixed. That's enough to scare you.
Yeah, we're going to have it fixed. We didn't say much about it after that. There wasn't much that could be said. The next day, I went down to a lot and bought a little Christmas tree and some trimmings, and we tried to pretend we were cheerful, but there was an uneasiness between us that had never been there before. Ellen seemed tired and listless. Several times during the day, I noticed her washing her hands with a brush, scrubbing the one that had touched the blood. That night, we each took a sleeping pill and went to bed. It was sometime after midnight when I was suddenly wide awake and staring into the darkness. In some way, I knew at once and instinctively what had awakened me. Ellen was not in her bed nor in the room. The nameless thing I feared gripped at my heart until I could scarcely breathe. I opened the bedroom door and started through the house, putting on every light that I could find. There was not much to search, but I searched thoroughly. The living room, the kitchen, bathroom, day, and even the garage. And all the time, the dread of looking where I knew at last I must look. For I think I knew from the very first time where I'd find her. It must have been a full minute that I stood before that closet door. Then I opened it. She stood there rigid, her arms at her sides, the fingers extended like claws. Her hair was over her face, her eyes stared out of it. Her lips were drawn back in a grin like an animal at bay. For a moment, I was frozen with the horror of it. I stretched out my hand. Very deliberately, she turned her head and sunk her teeth until they met into the flesh of my forearm. I'd raised my hand to strike at her, but already she'd relaxed her hold and gone utterly limp. She would have fallen unless I'd caught her. I carried her into the bedroom and laid her on the bed. Strangely, at that moment, my only thought was how I might revive her. Until I saw that it was not a faint, but a sleep that she'd fallen into. A sleep as deep and heavy as though she'd been drugged. And so I left her. But for me, that night, there was no sleep.
Jim?
Yes, Ellen?
Oh.
up so early?
Oh, I got a little restless. I'd make some coffee.
Oh, I had the most wonderful sleep. And I feel so rested.
Do you?
Mm-hmm. Jim.
What?
What's the matter with your arm?
Oh, I just hurt it.
Well, honey, it's terribly swollen. Let me see it.
No, it's all right, Ellen.
Oh, it isn't all right. You've got to see Dr. Wesley right away.
Sure, I will.
No,
I
now
will.
You promise me, Jim, that you'll go the first thing this morning. How'd it happen?
Why, there was a dog.
A dog?
Yeah, I heard him trying to chew through the screen door. I went out to chase him away, and he bit me.
Well, you mean there's all that racket, and I didn't even wake up?
No, Ellen, you didn't even wake up. It was clear to me that Ellen knew nothing of what had transpired the night before. I went to my office that morning and made a pretense of going over routine business, if only to restore my mind to some semblance of calm by the sight and sound of common, familiar things. The pain in my arm had become a persistent, dull throbbing. I made a late appointment with Dr. Wesley. He treated my arm with something of an arched eyebrow, and he said,
"Well, I've never seen anything quite like it before. That is, such a rapid onset of infection."
It was dark when I left his office. I hadn't realized it was so late. Driving home, my car seemed sluggish until I saw the needle on the dashboard and realized that I was pushing it to the utmost of its speed. I was racing home to prevent something before it was too late, before the darkness had conspired against me. For somehow I already knew with certainty that it was the darkness and the night that I had to fear. The curves of the canyon seemed endless. And then the cold fear leaped up inside me. My house, too, was dark. I went slowly up the stone steps in the road, looking, praying for some sign of light or life. There was none. The house was empty. Ellen was gone. I looked with the same self-torturing thoroughness, and in that closet first of all, knowing as I did so that it was hopeless. And so, alone in that empty house, I waited, powerless and helpless now, deadened in thought and will, empty as the house itself, save only for the overwhelming sense of a terrible foreboding. It was sometime in the early hours of the morning when I snapped on the radio, shortwave. Why, surely a minor question now, I only know that I did, and then I heard it.
Car 58, car 58, go to Laurel Canyon, the 4,000 block. A report that a man has been injured or attacked. Condition thought to be critical. Ambulance will follow. That is all.
I was there almost before the police, edging my way through the little crowd, staring down at the man lying there in his white uniform under the streetlight.
Yeah, the milkman, poor guy.
I heard him scream, but when I got here, just like this, there's
all
nothing
right,
on at all.
Stand back, stand back. Please stand back.
Well, you again.
I heard it on the radio. I live just down the road.
Yeah, I remember.
What happened?
Well, take a look. Maybe you can tell us.
He was dead. And he was lying on his back. And his throat had been torn out as though by the fangs of some wild animal. It is now Christmas Eve, or rather Christmas morning, for it's a little after midnight. I've been waiting here in the stillness of this empty house for nearly 24 hours, waiting for the end. Already once tonight, I've heard that dreadful wailing cry somewhere in the hills. I've nailed up the closet door, but that I know is childish, useless. My arm is horribly swollen and turning black, but that's nothing. It's another end that I foresee, as surely as other men foresee the rising of the sun. I hear the cry again. It's nearer now. I shall leave these notes in a sealed envelope and put it in a shoebox, in the hope that someone will give credence to these dark and terrible events, if indeed such nameless horrors can ever yield to mortal understanding. As for myself, I feel no longer any fear or even sorrow. Only a desire that the end and the thing that I must do may come soon. And it will be soon, I know. Yes. For there is someone at the door.
Someone at the door. What do you make of it, Sam?
It's quite a yarn. But what of it?
That's what I thought. Now, listen, that's not quite all of it. Huh? Clip to it's a newspaper clipping. Listen. Hollywood, December the 26th. Police reported what was apparently a case of murder and suicide in Cypress Canyon sometime in the early hours of the morning. The victims were James A. Woods, a chemical engineer, and his wife, Ellen. Preliminary investigation indicates that Mrs. Woods was killed by the blast of a shotgun in the hands of her husband, who then turned the weapon upon himself. That she fought desperately for her life, however, was evidenced by the disorder of the room and the severe lacerations inflicted upon her husband about the neck and arms. This is the second tragedy to be reported in Cypress Canyon within 24 hours, the other being the unexplained death of Frank Polanski, a milkman.
Well, no such murders or whatever they were ever occurred, if that's what's worrying you. The clipping, well, you have those things printed up, you know.
No, it's not that, Sam. That story was found in an unfinished house in Cypress Canyon. No number, no nothing, just a framework.
Uh-huh.
Now that house is finished. When I drove by it today, well, that's what stopped me, Sam, because it all fits. Now that it's finished, it is the house in the story, the same construction, the same vines and creepers on the lawn, even the same number.
So what, a guy who knows roughly what this house is going to be like writes a yarn and loses it or something?
Did he know the place was going to be listed for rental today, the Saturday before Christmas?
Oh, Jerry, coincidence. Two bits you find the guy next door is a ghost story writer or something, and he's been wondering for a year what happened to that thing he wrote.
Okay, coincidence. Well, I'm sorry I bothered you, Sam.
Don't be silly. I liked it. It's a good yarn. That the for rent sign you were talking about?
Oh, yeah. I'm going to put it up outside now.
Uh-huh. Well, so long, Jerry, and Merry Christmas again.
Yeah, well, thanks, Sam. I guess I was kind of silly, all right, huh?
Listen, when a guy named, whatever it is, Woods, with a wife named Ellen, comes in to rent that place from you, then you can start worrying.
Yeah. Well, so long, Sam.
So long, Jerry.
Come in.
Oh, we're sorry to bother you, but we just happened to see that for rent sign outside.
Well, yeah, I hung it out just this minute.
Is the house available?
Oh, sure it is.
Let me introduce myself. My name is James A. Woods, and this is my wife, Ellen.
How do? Wow. Looks like it's fixing to...
Yes, it does, doesn't it?
Suspense.
Presented by Roma Wines, R-O-M-A, Roma Wines, selected for your pleasure from the world's greatest reserves of fine wines. Tonight's show marks the third birthday of Suspense on the air, and this is Ken Niles asking our star of the evening, Robert Taylor, to help us celebrate.
Why didn't you tell me before, Ken? If I'd only known, I'd have baked a cake.
Well, Bob, all Suspense parties are surprise parties. As an old hand on Suspense, you know that in our plays, the tables are usually turned on the star. So tonight, although it's our birthday, we're going to give you a present. Here it is, a gift basket of Grand Estate California wines from Roma, America's greatest vintner, to our distinguished anniversary guest, Robert Taylor.
Thanks, Ken. You turn a nice table.
And you can set a nice table with Grand Estate Burgundy in your basket, Bob. For Grand Estate Burgundy means rare dining pleasure. Adds memorable distinction to holiday dinner. Even everyday meals are outstanding in taste when Grand Estate Burgundy is served. Yes, all Grand Estate wines presented by Roma are limited bottlings of outstanding taste excellence.
Well, that I know about Grand Estate wines, Ken.
But did you know that for Grand Estate wines, Roma selects only the choicest grapes? Then the ancient skill of Roma master vintners, necessary time, and America's finest winemaking resources guide the cuvee of this grape treasure to rich taste luxury. That's why discriminating wine users everywhere look to Grand Estate wines as the crowning achievement of vintner skill.
Reason enough. And now, Ken, who's all set to star on Suspense next Thursday?
It's that very wonderful actress and wonderful girl, Miss Susan Peters. Susan will appear as a young lady in straitened circumstances who finds herself mistaken for a very rich young lady and who is forced into continuing the deception with murder as a result.
I'll certainly make it a point to listen. And before I go, I'd like to thank this really great company of actors who have played with me tonight, and particularly Kathy Lewis, who played Ellen.
Thank you, Bob.
Tonight's original suspense play was written by Robert L. Richards. Next Thursday, same time, you will hear Miss Susan Peters as star of Suspense.
Produced by William Spear for the Roma Wine Company of Fresno, California. This is CBS, the Columbia Broadcasting System.
The Columbia Network takes pleasure in bringing you Suspense. Suspense, Columbia's parade of outstanding thrillers, produced and directed by William Spear and scored by Bernard Herrmann. The notable melodramas from stage and screen, fiction and radio, presented each week to bring you to the edge of your chair, to keep you in suspense.
Good evening. This is Orson Welles. I'm very happy I am to be back in the United States and back on the Columbia Network, even for so short a visit as this one. Back with old friends like Johnny Dietz, who is tonight's director, and Bernard Herrmann. The Mercury Theater presented tonight's radio play for the first time last year. We came right out then and hailed it as a classic of the medium. Nobody argued the point. A lot of people asked us to do it again, so it's gratifying to get the chance now and to find a favorite of ours in this distinguished anthology of spook shows. Personally, I've never met anybody who didn't like a good ghost story. But I know a lot of people who think there are a lot of people who don't like a good ghost story. For the benefit of these, at least, I go on record at the outset of this evening's entertainment with a sober assurance that although blood may be curdled on this program, none will be spilt. There's no shooting, knifing, throttling, axing, or poisoning here. No clanking chains, no cobwebs, no bony and or hairy hands appearing from secret panels or, better yet, bedroom curtains. If it's any part of that dear old phosphorescent foolishness that people who don't like ghost stories don't like, then again, I promise you, we haven't got it. Not tonight. What we do have is a thriller. It's half as good as we think it is. You can call it a shocker. It's already been called a real Orson Welles story. Now, frankly, I don't know what this means. I've been on the air directing and acting in my own shows for quite a while now, and I don't suppose I've done more than half a dozen thrillers in all that time. Honestly, I don't think even that many, but it seems I do have a reputation for the uncanny. Quite possibly, a little escapade of mine involving a couple of planets, which shall be nameless, is responsible. Doesn't really matter. Don't think I disapprove of thrillers. I don't. A story doesn't have to appeal to the heart. It can also appeal to the spine. Sometimes you want your heart to be warmed, and sometimes you want your spine to tingle. The tingling, it's to be hoped, will be quite audible as you listen tonight to The Hitchhiker. That's the name of our story, The Hitchhiker. camp on Route 66, just west of Gallup, New Mexico. If I tell it, perhaps it'll help me. Keep me from going crazy. I gotta tell this quickly. I'm not crazy now. I feel perfectly well, except that I'm running a slight temperature. My name is Ronald Adams. I'm 36 years of age, unmarried, tall, dark, with a black mustache. I drive a 1940 Buick, license number 6Y175189. I was born in Brooklyn. All this I know. I know that I'm at this moment perfectly sane. That it's not me who's gone mad. It's something else. Something utterly beyond my control. I've got to speak quickly. At any minute, the link may break. This may be the last thing I ever tell on Earth. The last night I ever see the stars. 6 days ago, I left Brooklyn to drive to California.
Goodbye, son. Good luck to you, my boy.
Goodbye, Mother. Here, give me a kiss, and I'll go.
I'll come out with you to the car.
Oh, no, it's raining. Stay here at the door. Hey, what's this? Tears? I thought you'd promised me you wouldn't cry.
Oh, I know, dear. I'm sorry. But I do hate to see you go.
I'll be back. It'll only be on the coast 3 months.
Oh, it isn't that. It's just the trip. Ronald, I wish you weren't driving.
Oh, Mother, there you go again. People do it every day.
I know, but you'll be careful, won't you? Promise me you'll be extra careful. Don't fall asleep or drive fast or pick up any strangers on the road.
Oh, gosh. I think I was still 17 here, you talk.
Oh, and wire me as soon as you get to Hollywood, won't you, son?
Of course I will. Don't you worry. There's nothing going to happen. It's just 8 days of perfectly simple driving on smooth, decent, civilized roads. With a hot dog or a hamburger stand every 10 miles. I was in fine spirits. The drive ahead of me, even the loneliness, seemed like a lark. I reckoned without him. Crossing Brooklyn Bridge that morning in the rain, I saw a man leaning against the cables. He seemed to be waiting for a lift. There were spots of fresh rain on his shoulders. He was carrying a cheap overnight bag in one hand. He was thin, nondescript, with a cap pulled down over his eyes. I would have forgotten him completely, except that just an hour later, while crossing the Pulaski Skyway over the Jersey Flats, I saw him again. At least, he looked like the same person. He was standing now with one thumb pointing west. I couldn't figure out how he'd got there, but I thought probably one of those fast trucks had picked him up, beaten me to the Skyway, and let him off. I didn't stop for him. Then late that night, I saw him again. It's on the new Pennsylvania Turnpike between Harrisburg and Pittsburgh. It's 265 miles long with a very high speed limit. I was just slowing down for one of the tunnels when I saw him, standing under an arc light by the side of the road. I'd seen quite distinctly the bag, the cap, even the spots of fresh rain scattered over his shoulders. He hallooed at me this time.
Hello! Hello!
I stepped on the gas like a shot. That's lonely countries of the Alleghenies, and I had no intention of stopping. Besides, the coincidences or whatever it was, neither the Willies. Stopped at the next gas station.
Yes, sir.
Fill her up.
Certainly, sir. Check your oil, sir?
No, thanks.
Nice night, isn't it?
Yes. It hasn't been raining here recently, has it?
Not a drop of rain all week.
Oh, I suppose that doesn't done your business any harm.
Oh, people drive through here all kinds of weather. Mostly business, you know. There aren't many pleasure cars out on the turnpike this season of the year.
I suppose not. What,
What about hitchhikers?
Hitchhikers here?
What's the matter? Don't you ever see any?
Not much. If we did, it'd be a sight for sore eyes.
Why?
Oh, a guy'd be a fool who started out to hitch rides on this road. Look at it.
Then you've never seen anybody?
No. Maybe they get the lift before the turnpike starts. I mean, you know, just before the toll house. But then it'd be a mighty long ride. Most cars wouldn't want to pick up a guy for that long a ride. And you know, this is pretty lonesome country here. Mountains and woods. You ain't seen anybody like that, have you?
No. Oh, no, not at all. It's just a technical question.
I see. Well, that'll be just $1.49 with the tax.
Gradually passed through my mind a sheer coincidence. I had a good night's sleep in Pittsburgh. I didn't think about the man all next day until just outside of Zanesville, Ohio, I saw him again. It was a bright, sunshiny afternoon. The peaceful Ohio fields, brown with the autumn stubble, lay dreaming in the golden light. I was driving slowly, drinking it in, when the road suddenly ended in a detour. In front of the barrier, he was standing. Let me explain about his appearance before I go on. I repeat, there was nothing sinister about him. He was as drab as a mud fence, nor was his attitude menacing. He merely stood there, waiting, almost drooping a little, the cheap overnight bag in his hand. He looked as though he'd been waiting there for hours. Then he looked up. He hailed me. He started to walk forward.
Hello! Hello! Hello?
No, not just now, sorry.
Going to California?
No, not today. The other way, going to New York, sorry. After I got the car back on the road again, I felt like a fool. Yet the thought of picking him up, of having him sit beside me, was somehow unbearable. At the same time, I felt more than ever unspeakably alone. Hour after hour went by. Fields, the towns ticked off one by one. The light changed. I knew now that I was going to see him again. And though I dreaded the sight, I caught myself searching the side of the road, waiting for him to appear.
Yeah, what is it? What do you want?
Sell sandwiches and pop here, don't you?
Yeah, we do in the daytime. But we're closed up now for the night.
I know, but I was wondering if you could possibly have a cup of coffee, black coffee. Just
no, not this time of night, mister. My wife's a cook. She's in bed.
No, don't shut the door, please. Listen, just a minute ago. Just a minute ago, there was a man standing here right beside the stand, a suspicious-looking man. I don't mean to disturb it. You see, I was driving along when I just happened to look, and there he was.
How's he doing?
Well, nothing.
You've been taking a nip, that's what you've been doing. Now, on your way before I call our sheriff Oates.
I got into the car again and drove on slowly. I was beginning to hate the car. If I could have found a place to stop, to rest a little. I was in the Ozark Mountains of Missouri now. A few resort places there were closed, only an occasional log cabin, seemingly deserted. That's all that broke the monotony of the wild, wooded landscape. I had seen him at that roadside stand. I knew I'd see him again. Maybe at the next turn of the road. I knew that when I saw him next, I would run him down. I didn't see him again. I didn't see him until late next afternoon. I stopped a car at a sleepy little junction just across the border into Oklahoma to let a train pass by.
when he appeared across the tracks, leaning against a telephone pole. Perfectly airless, dry day. The red clay of Oklahoma was baking under the southwestern sun. Yet there were spots of fresh rain on his shoulders. I couldn't stand that. Without thinking, blindly, I started the car across the tracks. He didn't look up at me. He was staring at the ground. I stepped on the gas hard, veering the wheel sharply toward him. I could hear the train in the distance now, but I didn't care then. Something went wrong with the car. The train was coming closer. I could hear its bell ringing and the cry of its whistle. Still, he stood there. And now I knew that he was beckoning me to my death. Frustrated him that time. The starter worked at last. I managed to back up. When the train passed, he was gone. I was all alone in the hot, dry afternoon. After that, I knew I had to do something. I didn't know who this man was or what he wanted of me. I only knew that from now on, I mustn't let myself alone on the road for 1 minute. Hello there. Like a ride?
Well, what do you think? How far are you going?
Where do you want to go?
Amarillo, Texas.
I'll drive you there.
Gee. You mind if I take off my shoes? My dogs are killing me.
Go right ahead.
Gee, what a break this is.
A hitchhike much?
Sure, only it's tough sometimes in these great open spaces to get the break.
I should think it would be, though. I'll bet you get a good pickup in a fast car. If you did, you could get places faster than, say, another person in another car, couldn't you?
I don't get you.
Well, take me, for instance. Suppose I'm driving across the country, say, at a nice steady clip, about 45 miles an hour. Couldn't a girl like you just standing beside the road waiting for Liz beat me to town, or any town, provided she got picked up every time in a car doing from 65 to 70 miles an hour?
I don't know. What difference does it make?
Oh, no difference. It's just a crazy idea I had sitting here in the car.
Imagine spending your time in a swell car thinking of things like that.
What would you do instead?
What would I do? If I was a good-looking fellow like yourself, why, I just enjoy myself every minute of the time. I'd sit back and relax. And if I saw a good-looking girl along the side of the road, hey, look out!
Did you see him?
See who?
A man standing beside the barbed wire fence.
I didn't see anybody. There wasn't nothing but a bunch of cows and a wire fence.
No?
What'd you think you was doing? Trying to run into the barbed wire.
There's a man there, I tell you. A thin gray man with an overnight bag in his hand. And I was trying to run him down.
Run him down? You mean kill him?
Say you didn't see him back there? You sure?
I didn't see a soul. As far as
that's
concerned.
Watch for him the next time and keep watching. Keep your eyes peeled on the road. He'll turn up again. Maybe any minute. There! Look there!
How does this door work? I'm getting out of here.
Did you see him that time?
No, I didn't see him that time. And personally, mister, I don't expect never to see him. All I want to do is go on living. I don't see how I will very long driving with you.
Oh, I'm sorry. I don't know what came over me, but please don't go.
So if you'll excuse me...
You can't go. Listen, how would you like to go to California? I'll drive you to California.
Seeing pink elephants all the way? No, thanks. Uh-uh, thanks just the same.
Listen, please, just 1 minute, please.
You know what I think you need, big boy? Not a girlfriend. Just a good dose of sleep.
Please.
There, I got it now.
No, you can't go. Please, come back.
Your hands off me. Do you hear me? Your hands off...
She ran from me. As though I were a monster, few minutes later, I saw a passing truck pick her up. I knew then that I was utterly alone. It was in the heart of the great Texas prairies. There wasn't a car on the road after the truck went by. I tried to figure out what to do, how to get hold of myself. I could find a place to rest, or even if I could sleep right here in the car for a few hours along the side of the road. I was getting my winter overcoat out of the back seat to use as a blanket when I saw him coming toward me, emerging from the herd of moving steer.
Hello!
Maybe I should have spoken to him then. Fought it out then and there. For now he began to be everywhere. Wherever I stopped, even for a moment, for gas, for oil, for a drink of pop, a cup of coffee, sandwich, he was there. I saw him standing outside the auto camp in Amarillo that night when I dared to slow down. I was sitting near the drinking fountain, a little camping spot just inside the border of New Mexico. He was waiting for me outside the Navajo reservation where I stopped to check my tires. I saw him in Albuquerque when I bought 20 gallons of gas. I was afraid to stop now. I began to drive faster and faster. I was in lunar landscape now. The great arid mesa country of New Mexico. I drove through it with the indifference of a fly crawling over the face of the moon. Now he didn't even wait for me to stop. Unless I drove at 85 miles an hour over those endless roads, he waited for me at every other mile. I'd see his figure, shadowless, flitting before me, still in the same attitude, over the cold, lifeless ground, flitting over dried-up rivers, over broken stones cast up by old glacial upheavals, flitting in that pure and cloudless air. I was beside myself when I finally reached Gallup, New Mexico this morning. There's an auto camp here. Cold, almost deserted this time of year. I went inside and asked if there was a telephone. I had the feeling that if only I could speak to someone familiar, someone I loved, I could pull myself together.
Your call, please.
Long distance.
Long distance, certainly. This is long distance.
I'd like to put in a call to my home in Brooklyn, New York. I'm Ronald Adams. The number is Beechwood 200828.
Certainly. I will try to get it for you. Albuquerque. New York for Gallup.
New York.
Gallup, New Mexico, calling Beechwood 200828.
I read somewhere that love could banish demons. It was the middle of the morning. I knew Mother would be home. I pictured her tall and white-haired in her crisp house dress, going about her tasks. Be enough, I thought, just to hear the even calmness of her voice.
Will you please deposit $3.85 for the first 3 minutes? When you have deposited $1.50, will you wait until I have collected the money? Deposit another $1.50. Will you please deposit the remaining 85 cents? Ready with Brooklyn. Go ahead, please.
Hello?
Mrs. Adams' residence.
Hello, Mother.
This is Mrs. Adams' residence. Who is it you wish to speak to, please?
What? Who's this?
This is Mrs. Winnie.
Mrs. Winnie? I don't know any Mrs. Winnie. Is this Beechwood 208-828?
Yes.
Where's my mother? Where's Mrs. Adams?
Mrs. Adams is not at home. She's still in the hospital.
The hospital?
Yes. Who is this calling, please? Is it a member of the family?
Well, what's she in the hospital for?
She's been prostrated for 5 days. Nervous breakdown. But who is this
nervous
calling?
Nervous breakdown? Well, my mother never was nervous.
It's all taken place since the death of her oldest son, Ronald.
Death of her oldest son, Ronald? Hey, what's this? What number is this?
This is Beechwood 208-828. It's all been very sudden. He was killed just 6 days ago in an automobile accident on the Brooklyn Bridge.
Your 3 minutes are up, sir. Your 3 minutes are up, sir. Your 3 minutes are up, sir.
And so I'm sitting here in this deserted auto camp in Gallup, New Mexico. I'm trying to think. Trying to get hold of myself. Otherwise, I'm going to go crazy. Outside, it's night. The vast, soulless night of New Mexico. A million stars are in the sky. Ahead of me stretch 1,000 miles of empty mesa. Mountains. Prairies. Desert. Somewhere among them, he's waiting for me. Somewhere I shall know who he is and who I am.
The Hitchhiker, and to Orson Welles, our considerable thanks for his playing of the title role. Mr. Welles?
Help wanted. Men, women, and children. Nature of work, hard, monotonous, back-breaking labor. Hours, 75 a week minimum. Pay, few cents an hour. Added inducement, 2 meals a day, including several ounces of bad bread and a cup of thin soup. Don't delay. Apply at once. How'd you respond to a want ad like that, Mr. and Mrs. American working man and woman? You'd laugh, wouldn't you, and throw the paper in the trash basket. Dismiss the whole advertisement as some kind of a joke, but believe me, it's no joke. It's a simple statement of the working conditions that exist today in Nazi Germany and the conquered countries under Nazi rule. It's also an exact statement of the working conditions that'll be imposed on you and every member of your family if the Nazis win this war. You yourself personally can stop them from winning, as you know. You don't have to give up your well-paid job to do it. You needn't have to be a soldier or a sailor or an airman or a nurse or a war worker to ensure American victory. Uncle Sam doesn't ask plain, ordinary, hard-working citizens like you to give him anything. All he does ask very seriously and very urgently is that you loan him 10 cents out of every dollar you make. That's all there is to it. Lend Uncle Sam a dime to win this war. And he'll pay you back with interest when he's won it. The easiest, most convenient way to lend him these dimes is to enroll in the payroll savings plan. Just tell your boss to deduct 10 cents from every dollar he pays you and lend it to Uncle Sam in your name. Sign up for this simple savings plan today, and when victory comes, you'll have war bonds in your pockets instead of Axis bonds on your wrists.
Suspense will be heard again 2 weeks from tonight. Next Wednesday night, September 9th, the Columbia Broadcasting System will present over many of these stations at 9:30 p.m. Eastern Wartime an address by W. Averill Harriman, the United States Lend-Lease Administrator in London. Mr. Harriman, as the personal representative of the President of the United States, attended the Moscow conferences between Winston Churchill and Joseph Stalin. Next Wednesday's broadcast will be Mr. Harriman's first public address since his return to this country. Suspense is produced and directed by William Spear. John Dietz was our guest director this evening. Tonight's radio drama was written by Lucille Fletcher. The original score was by Bernard Herrmann. This is the Columbia Broadcasting System.
This has been a Cryptic County podcast. To listen to our original storytelling podcasts and for all things suspense, horror, and weird, check out CrypticCountyPodcasts.com, where you'll find shows like Let's Not Meet, a true horror podcast, and Odd Trails, a true paranormal podcast. We'll see you next time. Stay safe.
You know what ought to happen next? If this was a horror story? That's what ought to happen next.
It did.